Yeah, I love that. That's what I was talking. Hello, it's me you're looking for. The fire in your eyes.
What is it about recording with this fucking network that everybody starts singing all the time? John, my spidey sense is tingling, if you know what I mean. Fuck you, Topher Grace.
Fuck you.
Oh my god, this scene is heart-wrenching. This could be the end of Spider-Man. Spider-Man's greatest nemesis is screenwriter ineptitude.
All right, everybody, goddammit. Grab your mask. Let's swing into action. Is everybody ready? Let's start the show.
Here, Tom Thompson, adventure begins. An exciting spectacle brought to you by NOW and Technicolor Podcast. Welcome to the heat. Swim on the feet. In a Technicolor, you know and me. Caught up in a flea. In a Technicolor, beat into the heat.
All right, everybody, and this is Jay Lost the Day, John, if you will, and I am sitting here with a good friend of mine. I'm very happy to have him because it just kind of came out of nowhere, and we got to do this. So here is epic film guy Nick.
Yeah, the wife was out of town this weekend, so I was like, I got to get on a mic and record something. I got to take advantage of having an empty house that I don't have to be as quiet in. So, yeah, it's an absolute honor and a privilege to be here, sir. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on, man. I am so happy to have you. I know we were just recently talking about setting up for you to come on. It was going to be a much later date, and then you kind of hollered out about having the free weekend, and I was like, I must hop on this.
Because your spidey sense was tingling, you know what I mean. Jesus.
God damn it.
Christ.
Oh,
who wrote that line in that script?
I don't know. Whoever it was needs to be fired.
Oh, my God.
I'd say he needs to be taken out back and beat, but someone could take offense to that.
Not to that. Oh. No, not to that saying. Not to like the last 45 minutes to an hour of that movie.
Oh,
sweet
no.
Sweet baby no. Jesus.
Oh, this is going to be great. We are actually coming at you today. We are sitting down. We're going to talk about the Tobey Maguire trilogy. We're not going to talk about just one of them. We're going to talk about all of them. So this is going to be really fun, and we're going to kind of get kicked off here, I guess. And we're going to start with the first one, Spider-Man.
If he can withstand just 3 minutes in the cage with Bonesaw McGraw, the sum of $3,000 will be paid to.
What's your name, kid?
The Human Spider.
The Human Spider, that's it? That's the best you got?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
The sum of $3,000 will be paid to the terrifying, the deadly, the amazing Spider-Man!
My name's the Human Spider.
I don't care, get out there.
No, he got my name wrong.
Get out there, you moron!
Bonesaw thing eats you up and spits you out, little man. I hope you brought your mommy with
you. We're gonna break you something to go crying.
Feel my leg. kind of mistake. I didn't sign up for a cage match. Hey, unlock the thing. Take the chain off.
Hey, Freak Show, you're going nowhere. I got you for 3 minutes. 3 minutes of plea time. What are you doing up there?
Staying away from you.
That's a cute outfit. Did your husband give it to you?
Bonesaw is ready.
Aw, dude. Like, seriously, that's my favorite part. That's my favorite part of the first one is literally just,
ooh, yeah, Bonesaw is ready. I got you for 3 minutes.
That's why you can't, as many issues as the first film has, it also has the goddamn Macho Man in it.
It does.
You can't hate, you cannot hate that. Oh my God, I love him. I love him so much.
Just off topic for just one brief moment. Did you ever watch Monkey off Dexter's Laboratory?
Yeah.
All right. Did you ever see the episode where the monkey had to face the wrestler from outer space that was going to beat everyone on Earth, and he would refuse to fight Monkey, and then when he did, Monkey just kept getting up, and he earned his respect. And that was Macho Man doing the voice.
I probably did, but I mean, you're talking.
Oh, dude, it was forever
an eternity ago.
It just,
yeah.
I have never forgot that, because it's just like, I will spare your puny planet because it bred something so spectacular. It's Monkey.
And I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, I'm like, I fucking love it. I fucking love it.
Oh my God.
But yes, Bonesaw, that is like literally the highlight of everything that is Spider-Man, the first movie.
It's kind of the point in that movie where, and watching it again today, and we were talking about this before we actually started the show, but it's one of those things where I'm watching it 15 years later, and I feel like I've just got a much more cynical eye cast toward it. I've kind of gotten to a point with the superhero genre where I feel like it's hit its high watermark. I feel like it did a few years ago, and we're just kind of riding the wave out now. So when I look back at it now, it's hard for me to remember that this was the beginning of that surge. Like, this was back in the very, very early days. And, you know, of course, you had all this stuff in the 80s. You had the stuff in the 90s, the Superman films and whatnot. But, yep, like, the beginning of the 2000s, or X-Men and Spider-Man and all that, is really where,
and Iron Man and everything,
yeah, all that stuff started to take off. So it's like, to me, I gotta try to not be as harsh with it, but at the same time, I'm watching it, and I was watching, I think probably right up until the wrestling scene, I didn't even like it. I was just kind of like taken aback by the way that I felt about it compared to how I remembered it. Like, it's been a while since I've watched the first one, so yeah. It kind of really, yeah, it just kind of struck me as odd a little bit, where I was just kind of like, I'm watching, I'm just kind of like, yeah.
No, I mean, I actually completely understand. It's been a long time since I've sat down and watched any of these, and especially the first one. And it's just one of those things that, like, I was kind of with you. They are all hard to like at the beginning of that movie. They're kind of all a little bit insufferable as far as it goes. The main thing I actually enjoy, though, with the base of the story kind of the first one, which was something I really enjoyed, was that it starts off on a low note. Like, it doesn't start off on anything like kind of fancy or anything. It's like literally a low note, and then the movie kind of ends on the same note.
Yeah.
And I really kind of appreciated the way it literally followed like this nice full circle all the way to the end, where it was like, you know, he is the hero, but he doesn't get what he wants, and he's still kind of stuck in like this really shitty situation. So I'm like, you started off in a shitty situation and you're still in it.
Yeah, but he's still in it with spider powers. So I mean,
he's in it with spider powers, admittedly. But he's just stuck in a shitty situation, and it just continues on him for a while. But it's one of those things that I really appreciate throughout the actual like film. Now, admittedly, this is actually the first time that I have actually seen James Franco in anything. This was the first time I ever saw James Franco.
Yeah. This was before you got all of his wacky stoner comedies that he did, and, you know, a lot of those movies were like, especially especially like in the kind of the 2010s and around, right around that era where he just kind of phoned it in a lot, like a lot back in those days.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, he did a couple, like Pineapple Express was really good. That's really great. And then, I don't know, This Is the End is actually pretty good.
That's still one of those movies, unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to see, especially with how much Paul and Wayne talk about it over on the Countdown. I really need to get that movie into my watch list, because I've heard it's actually really, really good.
It is very much worth a watch. It is actually very good. I was very skeptical of watching it for a while, and then I finally sat down one day. It was years after it had come out, and I finally sat down and watched it, and I really enjoyed it. And I was like, wow, this was really good. So, yeah, you should definitely check that out whenever you get a chance.
It's not that the beginning of the movie is totally, I think, void of any good elements, because you do get Willem Dafoe in the first one as Osborn, and I think he's easily, like, if you had to list off like the best things about that movie, I think he would have to be somewhere in like the top three of those.
Oh yeah,
he's just like he chews so much scenery, but he does it, you know, in that way that kind of only Willem Dafoe can. Where,
well, I mean, he's got that presence about
him. He does.
That literally, yep. He just, I mean, even if he's chew, like you said, he's chewing a scene up.
Yep.
You can't not watch Willem Dafoe chew that scene.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're just kind of transfixed by him, and he comes off as so much more natural, I think, in the film than a lot of the other actors do, at least initially. I think Tobey Maguire kind of really, really fits the role. We could probably, that's actually a good thing to talk about, I guess, is because we've, like, in cinemas now, we're getting our third incarnation of Spider-Man in the past 15 years. And you know, we've gotten to two films with Andrew Garfield, which were thank God I didn't have to watch those two. Good Lord.
I'm glad. Like, when we set this up and I said we can watch either one of them, and you said this set, and I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. I'm so glad he didn't pick the other set.
I think just if you want to take all three films together versus those two films, I would probably say that the Raimi trilogy is better, like, overall. You know, it's even with that garbage can of a third movie, you know, it is better overall than just the kind of muddled shit show that we got with the Garfield Spider-Man films. I mean, I love Andrew Garfield too, and I think he was great as Spider-Man, as Peter Parker in those movies, but Jesus God, those scripts were just a mess. They were a disaster.
Yeah, no, like, I don't even like, I love Jamie Foxx. I love Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
That was not Electro.
The saddest thing about that was, is like, for the first, like, I don't know, I forget, it's been a while since I saw that movie, but I think, like, initially, when they initially introduced the character, and, like, they actually kind of started to give him a good character arc, and then he turns into Electro, they have the scene in Times Square, and then he disappears from the movie wholesale. He's gone actually, for a huge portion of the runtime.
I don't even remember, is he supposed to be Electro or Shocker? Because I think he's supposed to be Shocker.
I'm pretty sure it's Electro.
Okay, I can't remember.
I haven't watched that movie
in forever. I started thinking about it. Yeah, I saw it one time.
And I'm not ever going to watch it again. So,
but this is the one thing I do remember about it. Like, in that film, at one point, there is a balloon that is literally the exact shape and coloration of the Shocker helmet.
Yeah.
So that's that I do remember. And I was like,
probably an Easter egg of some kind. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was some sort of Easter egg of some sort. And I just remember that. And I was like, is he supposed, and that's what always confused me. I was like, I thought he was supposed to be Electro.
Yeah. Regardless, I mean, that notwithstanding, I mean, I think, you know, for what, especially what Tobey Maguire was able to pull off as Peter Parker, I think he really hits that awkward, geeky, nerdy kind of persona that he's supposed to have, especially early on in that movie where he's, you know, basically just a walking calamity for the most part.
I give it to him. Yeah, he does. I think he does a really good, compared to it, the Garfield. I mean, I know a lot of people really like Garfield as Spider-Man and all that, but I was like, I actually like Maguire better as in these movies than I did that, because I think he actually did the Peter Parker thing pretty well, as far as just coming in, like you said, being a calamity and just being like completely nerdy and like very socially awkward. And of course, I know I saw someone mention it earlier, for like majority of the first movie, he just looks like he's crying.
It's actually
looks
all
like
three
he's about
of them.
To start crying.
It's all three of them.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's, he looks and like that's he's the funny thing about
a lot
it.
Of it.
Because I kept trying, it's really sad, like, when you think of how many images from these movies have become just kind of memes with him, you know, just with that crying face on and whatever. And, like, with the scene when Uncle Ben dies, and you get to see him with the crying face and everything, and you're like, yep.
Crying. Admittedly, he cries a lot in all of these movies. He cries at least once to twice per movie.
Yep. He does.
It's like some sort of, like, contractual thing with Tobey Maguire that he has to cry in at least every movie he's in at least once.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. It seems kind of interesting. It seems it's one of those things. I guess I should check out more of his movies again and see if I can spot that.
Yeah, sadly, you don't really see much of him. I think the last thing I saw him in was the Great Gatsby flick he did with Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm pretty sure that's the last time I ever saw him in anything.
Yeah, I think that's the last time I've heard anybody mention him.
I don't know what he pops up in these days. He's kind of fallen off of my radar. But then again, I don't think he's in too many. I think he does indie stuff more so now than he does anything else, but yeah. It's kind of weird.
Like Emilio Estevez.
Good God.
Hey, man, this is the one thing I don't get. Emilio did everything right. He didn't get no fucking wear. Charlie did everything wrong, and he's a fucking, like, raging legend.
Yeah.
Because he's winning.
People love to see people fall, and people love to see people fail. And that's kind of what watching Charlie Sheen was like. Yeah, it was just one constant string of failure.
It was one constant string of train wrecks.
Yeah, pretty much. Speaking of train wrecks, we could talk about Kirsten Dunst in this movie, in all these movies as MJ.
I never much cared for their choice for MJ with Kirsten Dunst in these movies. I'm just... I don't think she really fit the part.
I don't think she fit the part, and I mean it's sad because these movies kind of soured me on her as an actress and a lot of other stuff. Like, she generally just kind of rubs me the wrong way in most movies. Like, I've seen movies like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I think she's good in, and there's some other movies where I think she's good or decent in them. But
I'll tell you one where she's really good: Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah, never saw it. That's an oldie. That's an oldie.
Oh, it's old. As a matter of fact, it's one of her starting roles, and she is literally, like, I don't know, like 10, 12 years old.
Yeah.
So she's a little kid, but she does really good in that film.
Yeah, but not only is she terrible, I just don't think she fits the part. I think you're right about that. But I also think the character of MJ is just a horrible, just asshole of a character. I hate her. I hate her in these movies.
Well, I don't like the fact that it's like they base this whole thing that, like, she's a pretty chick with a snobbish attitude that already has, like, some sort of abusive background that, like, makes her, like, really asshole-y, like you kind of said, because she's very pushy about a lot of things through the whole movie and through the whole, like, series, really. It seems like it constantly jumping back and forth between, like, literally Peter and Harry.
Yeah, she does that a lot. And, I mean, especially in the beginning of the first movie where, you know, she's dating Flash, who is an asshole himself. But, I mean, he's just kind of, you know, meant to be your stereotypical kind of jock bully kind of character. And, you know, it's hilarious to me when I'm watching through it again today, especially because she, you know, like, she's having these scenes and whatnot with Peter, and, like, she's trying to have these scenes, like, they write her these scenes where she's supposed to be, like, more compassionate and whatever, and then, like, at the end of the scene, she just, like, you know, walks away with her, you know, colossal asshole of a boyfriend, like, at the end of it, you know. And then, like, the one of the best scenes that's an example of this, I think, is think of the scene where in the lunchroom, you know, he gets the web on the lunch tray and, you know, flips it back, it hits Flash, and he, like, ooh, he leaves his room really, really quick. And, you know, they get into that fight where basically, you know, Flash is just trying to beat the hell out of him, you know, and she runs in and is like, no, it was an accident. And then Flash is just trying to beat him up for, like, a couple of minutes. And then Peter, like, literally just hits him once,
knocks
time.
Him across the fucking hallway.
It's a great scene, like, for that kind of, you know, nerd versus bully sort of trope, and, you know, for Peter as a character.
Well, it's,
you know,
very iconic. It's an iconic little kind of scene, especially for Spider-Man, and it's a throw back for to another part, like, especially with, like, the animated series and things, when they finally do, like, the origin of Spider-Man, where he became Spider-Man and different things.
But the worst part about that scene is after he hits, like, I mean, literally Flash is just trying to
I know what you're about to say, man.
He hits him once, and then the look that she gives Peter is like, I want to hit her, like, with a chair.
She looks at him like he has done the worst possible
thing. Yeah, like he has done the most horrible thing ever.
Like, he insinuated the fight, like he just dogged him down and just beat his ass.
She looks at
him within an inch of his life.
As if Peter had dove on top of Flash and just beaten him into a bloody mess. Like, that's how she looks at Peter. And it's kind of a funny juxtaposition from the start of that scene where she's running out into the hallway chasing Flash, and she's like, no, Flash, it was just an accident. You know, it's kind of a like I said, it's kind of a funny thing where she's trying to stop Flash, and then Flash won't be deterred and just tries to beat him up. But then as soon as Peter, you know, defends himself, literally all he does is hit him once. Literally. I hate her. I hate her character. I never, ever, ever. And that's why, like, all of these movies, and even in the second movie, which I absolutely love and we'll get to, but it's just every time the motivation for something is MJ, I'm just like,
it's kind of very sandpapery.
It is, and I hate that the film begins with that narration where, oh, you know, I dislike narration for the most part in film anyway, but then the first film starts with that narration of, you know, oh, well, like most stories, this one's all about a girl, and then he sits there and he describes her and stuff. Like, number one, stop narrating, and then number two, just no.
I don't know, man. I like a good narration, but it, like a good narration into a film. But about the point where he gets to it's about a girl, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm good.
The problem that I have with the narration is, especially in this movie, is everything that he narrates is directly implied or directly set up, and you see it. If not in the opening of the film, later on in the film, like, you get to see all the struggles he goes through and stuff. If anybody ever told you my life was easy or whatever, it's like we're going to get all that from watching it, so you don't need to tell us that at the beginning. Like, we get it.
My whole thing is literally where it should have stopped with the narration is literally at the very beginning, after you first see him on the side of the bus running, after that last little sentence into it. That was the last time you needed him to narrate anything for the film.
Yeah, where he says, that's me, and then that should be the end of it, yeah.
That should be the end of the narration for the beginning of the film, and then everything else is just completely visual, like you said, implied, or, I mean, literally, you didn't need him telling you over everything that this was about this particular thing, scene or setup. So it's, I completely understand about that. I completely understand. And then, like, you know, you say you get his, you've got to the point after that, like, we've touched on it, I guess, where he's actually doing the wrestling thing with Bonesaw because of the scene earlier where literally she's talking to Peter and Flash rolls up in his brand new car and she's gone.
Yeah.
Gone. So he decides he needs him a car and finds a fucking Porsche for less than three grand. Okay.
Oh my God. I mean, I guess all that does propel him to go to the wrestling match to try to win the money, which does give us not only Bonesaw, but it also gives us the amazing Bruce Campbell cameo role.
Oh, so yeah, definitely.
That's perfect.
Which is something I love.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell, and I'm going to love pointing this out as we go, but I love that first Bruce Campbell cameo, because technically in the movie Bruce Campbell actually came up with the name Spider-Man, and I love that because he was gonna go, I'm the human spider, and Bruce Campbell's like, no man, that's fucking lame.
Oh my, yeah, his reaction to it's the human spider, what, that sucks.
Yeah, just that's terrible, man. And then goes out there and he's like, yeah, the amazing Spider-Man. Yeah. And from there he just becomes Spider-Man, which is great. But you get the whole thing after that, like the money, the whole dude dicked him. Dude totally dicked him.
Yeah.
Man, you only gave me 2 minutes, so I'm only giving you $100.
It's one of those things where, I mean, in terms of motivation, like in terms of, that's where the movie really starts to get good. Because
I literally think at that point, though, he should have looked at old boy and just been like, hey, man, I gave you 2 minutes, so that should at least count for at least $2,000. And you saw me beat the hell out of that guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, you just saw me beat the ever-loving hell out of Bonesaw. So, yeah, like, don't you think that you should pay up the money?
Pay me?
Yeah.
And then later on, after dude has robbed from you, you know, he runs up and he's like, you could have stopped. You could have beat the hell out of that guy. And he's like, you know, it's not my problem. Very much pointed out the exact thing we're talking about.
Yeah, that's like I said, that's when the movie starts to get good. It's after the wrestling scene, you know, it the motivation and the kind of the character motions that you go through here are all perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you just dicked him over. Obviously, he's not going to do anything to stop the guy that just robbed him, which ends up being, you know, kind of the tragic event that really propels him forward in his career as Spider-Man and everything, which, I mean, it, you know, as tragic as it is, it plays out really, really well. And, like, obviously, he's full of rage. He's really angry when he finds out Uncle Ben's been shot, and, like, he just goes into straight up pursuit mode. And then when he finds out that it was the dude that he let go, it's kind of one of those, you know, like, character moments for him where he realizes that his actions are going to have consequences, and that he, you know, he kind of has to stew with this whole, well, the great power, great responsibility thing, all that. He's got to kind of let all this stuff stew in him and figure out what he's going to do from there.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to figure out what he's going to do. He's got this whole thing where he's like, he's still caught up about the idea that, you know, he didn't, the last thing he said to his uncle really was just something really dicky. And then everything that, and then he has to live with that, like you said, with the fact and stew with it, that he let that guy go. Then it happened with this chain of events. So now you actually get the lead into him wanting to be more of a hero and prevent that particular thing from happening.
Which is great. Which is
with other
is
people,
great.
Which is great, which is fine motivation. It is definitely a great setup, and it perfectly propels it forward. One of the only things I really had an issue with in general with the whole setup of Spider-Man was just the whole self-contained, like, actual web shooters, like his natural web shooters, instead of him having to actually create the actual mechanism capsules for the web shooter, he actually had ones that were naturally part of his body. And I understand that I guess they were going to use it later on, but it was one of those things that I was like, when I first watched it as a kid, I was like, oh, that's cool. But later on watching it, going to this rewatch, I went, yeah, I kind of wish they had gone with the actual, like, the mechanized web shooters and had to make him, like, learn how to make the webbing and all that stuff. Because I feel like later on, they kind of skimped you on some of his abilities with his web making abilities overall, because Spider-Man, by the time you get really into it, he should be able to do more than just shoot, like, the web balls at you.
Yeah,
like he should be able to shoot, like, web spikes, balls, like enormous web nettings and all sorts of shit. So, I mean, he gets a lot better with it as he goes. So that was one thing I understand it's part of the driving force of the plot.
Yeah.
Later on as we go, but it was just something I originally kind of didn't much care for on this rewatch.
That was one of those things that for me it never mattered, but I think that comes down to the difference between being a fan of the comic books and not ever reading any of the Spidey comics. Because for me, like, when I found out, like, when I first saw the movie and I found out that was a controversy, I was like, wait, what? Like, I had no idea that was even a thing. So for me, it never bothered me.
No, I understand. Like I said, when I first saw it when I was younger, I didn't much think about it, didn't much care. I just thought, wow, that's really cool. And then, like I say, on this rewatch, I went, you know, I don't really like that, because I wish they had gone the other way about it, but it's neither here nor there, because they, like I say, they use it later. But,
yeah,
you know, you get that. And then William Dafoe's character all the way through this is great. From the entire time that you meet Norman at the beginning, and as you progress through to the point where he finally does the self-testing on himself to make himself into the Green Goblin.
Yep.
I want to point out that during this section, you see his muscle mass increasing in the computer.
Yep.
On the screen. But when you look at William Dafoe, at no point does his muscle mass increase.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And I don't think they gave him too stringent of a workout regimen. I mean, Tobey Maguire obviously had one where, you know, he wakes up that next morning, and they're very deliberate, like, not to shoot him completely shirtless, you know, before he wakes up the next morning, because obviously he had already chiseled out for that role.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
You know, yeah, that's one of those cool things. You know what? One thing I noticed about the first movie as I was watching it today, I was like, New York in this universe has the shittiest police detectives on the planet. The guy that works at Oscorp, first he kills him. Then he blows up Quest Aerospace. Then he destroys the board. Like, I mean, literally, like, no police detective anywhere, ever. And it's never alluded to, it's never looked at or anything in the film. You know?
No, no.
Where, you know, literally any police detective worth their salt would be like, okay, let's see, who does all this benefit? Norman Osborn. Let's see, you know, they were competing with Quest for a contract, which I'm sure was probably public knowledge. Or, yep. or something, or they could have subpoenaed the information, whatever. That benefits Norman Osborn, etc., 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 etc. And I'm thinking of it, and I know the general was kind of a dick and just had it out for Norman, like he didn't like him, but I'm looking at the, like, the glider technology, and I'm like the general is so dismissive of the glider, like, it's just meh. That's like, what? I'm like, that thing's badass as hell. Like, you just right? don't care about that? You just completely dismiss that? No, tell me about the performance enhancers. I'm like, wait, tell me about the fucking glider. That thing's awesome.
Hell yeah, man. He's just like... Like you say, he's got it out for Norman. He's got it out for him. He just doesn't.
And then you
like
see that
all.
Quest Aerospace thing, like that stupid.
Oh,
what
dude,
in
the
hell
the was
that? Thing? Was
that from Lost in Space?
I don't even know what that was. It looked like the dude was trapped in a personal submarine or something.
It's what it looks like, a little personal submarine that was meant for space exploration in the movie Lost in Space. I swear to God, it looks like it's something
the
from
funny
that
thing
universe.
To me,
and I'm like,
too,
what the fuck is this?
Yeah, the funny thing to me, too, is, you know, you have the general, and he goes to Oscorp. He's very dismissive of the glider. He wants to know about the performance enhancers, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes to this Quest Aerospace trial, and he sees this big, giant, hulking bodysuit that looks completely immobile, looks completely terrible, and all the dude does with it is hover up off the ground a little bit. That's literally all he does. And like the glider, like you've already seen tests of the glider, you already know what the glider can do, so you really care about the glider right now? Like the glider's the only thing that means anything to you? Like, you know, like you don't give a shit about the glider, you'd rather see this big giant hulking like a pill shaped bodysuit that you can't even move. Mass. Like all it does is hover a few feet off the ground, and then of course the goblin comes in that scene, and this glider's so maneuverable, it's so aerodynamic and flies all over the place. It's like, what? Like they could have at least come up with something that was like as cool as the glider for competition, because it, like I'm looking at it
would have made
my,
sense.
Yeah, through my non-defense department contract wanting persona, but like even just as a person, I'm like, no one in their right mind would want that gigantic, monstrous, disgusting thing that Quest Aerospace was doing. They would want the glider. Like,
well, if it was like a fucking badass looking mech suit, then it'd be one thing, but
yeah, but it wasn't.
The thing literally,
it just hovered off the ground a few feet. That's it.
I was like, you look at it, it was like, that thing can't do it. It can't even walk forward.
It can't do anything. It's just terrible. I'm like, man, I've fucked the performance enhancers. Just give me that glider.
Yeah, just give me the glider. I'm good. I'm just good.
Oh my God.
It's fucking great.
I just,
but yeah, no, dude, it's fucking terrible. Like the detectives are terrible. And, what about, J. Jonah Jameson?
Yeah, by far the best part of all three of these movies.
Yes.
I mean, literally, yes. Just so perfectly cast, so perfectly portrayed. He literally steals every single scene he's in all of the movies. Like,
oh, I love him. I
all
love
of his
it.
Delivery
he's the best
is
part.
So on point every single time. I love, like, just kind of the energy at which he operates. And, like, you know, he's constantly got people bombarding him and bugging him about stuff. And he's just like, nope, flying all over the place, yelling at people, doing this, doing that. It's amazing. It is.
I fucking love it. It's
the
like,
man.
We've got a problem. We've got a problem. Yeah, I know we've got a problem. Well, no. Macy's in this other one. They booked on page 6. move corduroys to page 8 and give them a 10%, a 15% discount. Wait, no, make it 5. We can't do that. Make it fucking happen. Get out of my face.
Oh my God, it's
I, no, I'm, I love the infertile.
Oh, he's
your,
good.
Your wife's on line one. Click.
Oh my God. I forget, but there's one of the movies where and they all kind of bleed together for me because he's just so good throughout all of them. But there's like the one where she calls in and says that she lost the checkbook, and he's like, thanks for the good news.
Oh yeah, it's the second one. That's the second one.
Yeah, the second. He's just so good in all of the movies, though. It's
they are.
It's insanely crazy how good he is. It's kind of a shame that he doesn't show up until, I mean, he shows up in the story when he should. It's not that. Mm-hmm. It's just he's so good when he finally shows up that you're like, man, I could have just watched this guy literally the whole time and been great. Hell yeah. And been fine with it. But they would have had to force him into the script if they put him in earlier than that. It just wouldn't have made any sense.
No, they would have. It wouldn't have.
But Jesus Christ, J.K. Simmons is good.
Oh, he is, dude. I love that guy every time I see him. So it's one of those things that he is an actor that every time I see him, it is a delight, because it does not matter where he's at, he's always really good at it. He's just a great actor. But I mean, I don't know, overall the first one, like I say, William Dafoe, Toby, the entire story set up, and then like Harry, like with James Franco, which honestly I think James actually did Harry really well, because Harry is very much that way. He's kind of shy, introverted a little bit, and a little bit of a fuck up.
Yeah, and he has a nice character arc over the course of the three movies. Of course, we'll get to the third movie. Jesus.
Oh yeah, Christ. Definitely. But
in the first movie and then the second movie, I think he really does a great job. In the first movie, he's really just kind of a son that wants his father's love and approval, and obviously doesn't have it. You know, where he gets jealous of seeing Peter, you know his father, because he's into science and his father's a scientist. So obviously he has that connection, whereas, you know, James Franco just doesn't seem to have that. So his Harry is kind of, you know, the whole time searching for it, and even continues into the subsequent films too, where he's, even though his father's dead, he's still seeking his father's approval. And yep. I think that's a great character arc, and I think it works really, really well. And Franco, for the most part, I mean, I don't think he's by far the best performance in the film or films, but I think he does an adequate and an admirable enough job that you don't like dislike him.
No, I don't dislike him. I'm not saying he's like the greatest part of the movie, but I am saying for what the character is, he did a pretty decent job.
You know what is the greatest part of the movie? That shit ass awful goddamn pile of garbage goblin mask.
Yeah. I was not a fan of the goblin mask. I was like, holy crap, why did they make that so bad? They could have done anything, and this is what they do.
The saddest thing is they show it on like the Blu-rays and I think the DVD special features and stuff like that, and you can watch it on YouTube. But like, they did screen tests of Willem Dafoe with the makeup on, just like the kind of classic goblin from the comics, where he was in makeup. He wasn't in this ridiculous flight suit with a giant ass helmet. And like, I mean, Willem Dafoe just looks menacing as hell anyway when he wants to. So like, I cannot fathom where during the creative process they were like, no, let's put this giant helmet on his head anyway. And it looks horrible. It is when I think of things I hate about this movie and things that knock this movie down a couple points for me, where it's that goddamn helmet. It's that helmet. Literally every other villain in this series was done better than the goblin's outfit. Like, Willem Dafoe's performance aside,
and there's not a stitch of purple in that goddamn outfit. Not a stitch.
It's terrible. It's unbelievably bad. Like, I mean, even if they would have just had like Willem Dafoe not have the helmet on, like the scenes when he's Norman and like he's in goblin mode as Norman, he's great. And his face is expressive. And why you would choose to bury that under that giant monstrosity I'm literally baffled. I still, when I watched it today, still baffled. I still do not understand it.
I'm going to be honest with you. That scene where he knocks out Spider-Man with the gas, and then he wakes up and he's talking his deal with him near the end. Literally, I feel like there was a lot of malice and menace taken out of the scene by the helmet, because I feel
absolutely.
You said if you had actually been able to see William Dafoe's face, even if it had just been totally fucking green and that makeup and just looking menacing, it would have had been so fucking menacing seeing him looking at him making that deal.
And you know what the sad thing is?
Because you could see it going from like this regular face to just crazy.
You could see that menace. Like, think of the scene later on in the movie when he's talking to himself in the mirror. Like, when he of realizes that the goblin persona is the thing, and they did all that practically. They didn't do multiple takes of that. That was all one take where they just kind of had multiple cameras going, and it was just Willem Dafoe switching back and forth between those two characters on the nose. It's so perfect, and then you bury him under that mask. And the funny thing is, and not to get too nitpicky about it, but it's hard not to nitpick that stupid and ridiculous suit and helmet, but like the ADR, whatever the lines were that Willem Dafoe was reading when they filmed it weren't the same as the ADR lines, because if they are, his body language, like with the way he moves his head and stuff when he's talking, it doesn't sync up with the words he's saying. So when I was watching it, in I've always noticed that as well. It's like, it doesn't really feel like he would be moving like that when he's saying those things. It feels like they kind of like maybe a second too early or a second too late or whatever. Like I said, not to get too nitpicky, Justin, sorry. Damn, go eat your fudge. It's like I said, when I already hate that suit so much, it's not easy to forgive everything else about it that specifically made it worse.
No, I understand. But yeah, no, like in that final scene where they're getting into it and he kills himself with his own glider, and he just does that final line with the "don't tell Harry." I'm like, damn, everybody doesn't want to tell, nobody tell Harry shit. Just everybody wants Harry in the dark.
Oh, Harry. We'll get to that when we get to 3.
Oh, yeah, no, but, you know, like I say, and then he, you know, of course, Harry apparently thinks that Pete, Spider-Man, has killed his dad, and then we go through the funeral, and he's about to get MJ, and he's like, no, I can't. I can never actually love you. And then walk away.
And that's another scene where the narration kills me, because he narrates his feelings, and then he just says them anyway. So you didn't need to narrate it, and, like, what he says, like the idea that he can't date her or can't be with her because he doesn't want to put her in danger, it's completely implied by what he says, by his dialogue. You don't need to have him narrate it. God damn it.
I guess he thought people were really simple and couldn't take the hint.
Yeah, that's what you call telegraphing it way too much for the audience. Like, I think my audience is dumb and I need to really explain it to them or they're not going to get it. Like, it's completely implied by that idea where he, you know, the scenes leading up to it and then that scene itself where he knows he can't be with her because it's going to put her in danger. So he chooses not to. And it's like, narration drives me nuts.
That's terrible.
Overall, a good movie, though. I mean, overall, like, with all the faults of it, we've kind of ragged on it a little bit more than we've praised it, but it's still a great movie.
I think we have, but it's a fantastic movie. Yeah. Like, I still really, really enjoy this one. I still enjoy overall the main performances, and I think Toby's and, like, William Dafoe's, like, interactions throughout the entire film are actually really, really the highlights of the whole thing with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And of course, Bruce Campbell.
And Rosemary Harris's Aunt May, too. We haven't mentioned Aunt May.
Damn it.
Rosemary Harris's Aunt May is on point. I love her. She is just
best Aunt May ever.
Effortlessly charming in all. She's great in all three of the movies. She's one of those elements, kind of like J. Jonah Jameson, where all three movies, she nails it every single time. She's just fantastic.
I love her. She's totally great. And we're definitely going to talk about a lot more of her involvement into the story as we hop into this next one with Spider-Man 2.
Do you love me or not?
Don't.
You don't. Kiss me.
Kiss you.
I need to know something. Just one kiss.
Parker, and the girlfriend.
What do you want?
I want you to find your friend, Spider-Man. Tell him to meet me at the West Side Tower at 3 o'clock.
Well, I don't know where he is.
Find him. Or I'll peel the flesh off her bones.
If you lay one finger on her...
You'll do what?
God, Spider-Man 2.
I segued into that pretty decent.
That was a, ooh, man. Put your foot on that Segway's ass and pushed it right through the door.
I really did. I was like, come on now. Let's get it.
Oh, this one will be a little bit different compared to one, because compared to the first one, when I watched Spider-Man 2, I can't think, aside from MJ, because MJ's always just a kind of a thing that sticks in my craw a little bit, but aside from her, I can't tell you anything I really dislike about this movie.
The only real qualm I have about the film in Spider-Man 2 legitimately is just Doc Ock and the arms. And it's just because of the fact of the cerebral
the inhibitor chip thing.
Chip, yeah. Inhibitor chip on the back. When he's like, oh, I have this inhibitor chip, and it keeps the keeps them from taking it. And he literally just says to them, okay, he talk about that in just a second. All right, so Spider-Man 2, yeah, that shit is fucking great. This one is actually, I think, the best, and I think Nick will agree with me on this, of the trilogy.
By far. By country fucking mile.
Hell yeah. I mean, and everything about this is perfect. Like you say, you get a little bit more involvement with Aunt May and just kind of her helping keep Peter on the right track as he goes through the film. You get a little bit more J. Jonah Jameson,
which is great
in this one, which is amazing. And of course, you said he's got one of your favorite lines of his in this one.
This movie is. When I think about best films in the genre, it's definitely at the top of that list. Top three, top four. It's definitely among them. I mean, I don't think maybe one of the Marvel films, maybe one or two of them, has touched it. And any of the other comic book films that have come out. I mean, it's very rare that you get a film that is this. I mean, even MJ, even as much as I hate her character, I still think her arc in this film works really well in terms of vis-a-vis Peter. You know, I really, really feel like that makes sense. I really feel like it works very well. Peter, of course, has the fantastic story arc of, you know, he's so overburdened with everything that he's trying to do in his life that, you know, he wants to leave it behind. He wants to drop the whole Spider-Man thing. And then you have Alfred Molina coming in. And speaking of Willem Dafoe in the first one, how good he was, you really needed to up the ante. And Alfred Molina does exactly that. As Doc Ock, he is
unbelievably
good in that role.
He is Doc Ock.
Yeah, he sells it 100%. He's so good in this movie. And then you've got James Franco as Harry coming back in, and now you know he's burdened with this guilt over his father's death. He hates Spider-Man. He wants to kill Spider-Man because of it.
He wants his vengeance. Yep. And now he's also been shoved into from his college career into running.
Yeah, he's Oscorp running Oscorp
because now he is literally the head of the board and controlling the money. So I mean, he's faced with a lot of strong decisions throughout the film.
That's one of those things about the first film that always really bugged me. It's like Norman Osborn started Oscorp and everything, but then he gave away enough controlling interest in the company that the board can just oust him. You started the company; it's your company. Why would you not keep a controlling interest? It drives me nuts.
Well, to be honest with you, it's one of those things that it gets on my everlasting nerves, like you say, about the fact that they are literally kicking him off of his own board because he's given over enough control. But it reminds me of Steve Jobs back when he was doing, I believe, what, Apple or Macintosh at the time.
Yeah.
And they literally kicked him out of, they kicked him off the board and basically fired him. And then he came back and, of course, made Apple iPods and all that good mess and regained his own control of the board. But it's just because of the fact that he literally gave up more than 51% of... I'm like, never give up controlling Rain.
Yeah, that's the
always keep.
That was
51%.
One of those things I forgot to mention that during watching the first movie, and they of course do it so they could set up the scene where he kills the board, and which is a great scene when he kills them, and it's a great scene in the boardroom when he, you know, goes at him a little bit when they try to get rid of him. But it's like the whole time I'm like, you started the company. Why would you give up controlling interest? I mean, obviously it's a publicly traded company, I would assume, but even still, why would you give up controlling interest in your own company? Like, it just, to me, it just seems to be one of those scenes that they just needed to create for dramatic effect. And, you know, whatever.
It is. And it, I'm going to be honest with you. It's just like the second one where I was mentioning about the natural web shooters in the first film and how it carries over into this, where, to like you said, he doesn't want to necessarily be Spider-Man anymore as the film progresses, because of the fact that, you know, it's interfering with the fact that he wants to be there for MJ. And then, of course, you know, she's going out with John Jameson, which is Jay's J. Jonah's actual son, which is a I like how they mixed a lot of Easter eggs and, like, they made sure to mix a little bit of story, a lot of story in there, and they threw a lot of stuff in there as you go. But you know, you have that going on, and
man, this film is good.
Yeah, the film is great.
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, there's really so little about it that I can find at fault. I think they give Molina's Doc Ock enough character motivation at the beginning, where you buy his transformation and you buy into the fact that he wants to complete this fusion test and how it was his life's work and everything. And then, you know, of course, he loses his wife in the accident, and it kind of becomes an obsession for him. I agree with you in terms of the inhibitor chip. It's clearly one of those things where they show the inhibitor chip, and as soon as they do, you're like, well, that's going to get fried. Like, you know that's going to happen. It's a very, very clear setup. I don't even think it needs it, to be 100% honest.
It's one of those things that that was one of the things I meant to say about the inhibitor chip was, it literally, he gets these arms on and literally just says that he can control them cerebrally on his back through, like, these pins and, you know, gone into his spine. And the woman standing in the crowd then points out, says, well, if the AI in this is so advanced, how, you know, and I'm like, he didn't say shit about the AI.
That's like,
he didn't say a single word.
The one, like, really groan worthy moment of this film is her giving that line, literally asking that question, because, you know, it's just a setup, because that's exactly what happens. You know it, you smell it. As soon as she asks, it's like, well, oh, yeah, the inhibitor chip. Oh, well, yeah, well, that's definitely going to get fried, and it's definitely going to be what happens. And it is.
Yeah, and that's definitely going to be part of the driving force. And, of course, like I said, the web shooters going out because, like you said, he lost his confidence.
Pretty much.
He's losing his confidence as he goes, which I feel is kind of ridiculous. I'm like, so he's losing his powers as Spider-Man because he's losing confidence in himself because he wants to be with MJ. That's fucking ridiculous a little bit. And the plot story is to drive it forward to the point where she gets into some sort of course, another life-threatening situation that makes him want to be Spider-Man again, and of course gives him his powers back.
It's one of those things. The only thing that I kind of dislike about Peter's whole Spider-Man No More arc is, like, the kind of waxing and waning of his powers, kind of at will. Like, you know, he's got the moment where, I mean, the real question to ask about this film is, does he still have his Spider-Man powers or not? Because even when he's doubting himself, even when, like, the web shooters go out on him and he falls, like, hundreds and hundreds of feet and crashes into stuff, he's fine. Which is obviously part of his Spider-Man powers, but, like, are some of them just kind of always there and he can't get rid of them? And then the others are just activated based on, I don't know, how good he feels about himself. Like, it's one of those things that they just kind of do it for the convenience of the plot and so they can have those specific scenes. But overall, I still like that arc, though.
when he goes, you know, he's like, I'm back. And then he falls and hurts himself and he goes, my back.
Yeah. Which is a funny scene. But it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, okay. Yeah, but
okay.
Some of the Spider-Man powers obviously are still there, but they're not there. And then one of the things that bugged me about this movie, rewatching it today, is after the cafe scene where Doc Ock kidnaps Mary Jane and he bursts out of the rubble and then he walks outside with his glasses on and he sees Fuzzy, you know, all in front of him. And then, you know, the audio in that scene is really like muffled and distorted. And he takes the glasses off and then the audio clears up and he puts them back on and the audio gets all muffled and distorted again. I'm like, wait a minute, what? I'm nitpicking again, Justin. I know.
Oh, no, that's funny, though.
I get
that's
it. Funny, it's really, though. Really funny, though, because you're like, wait a minute, what the fuck is going on? Like, what? But, you know, it's...
They literally wanted to display blurriness with the audio.
Oh, my Lord. It's blurriness funny. For the visually impaired or something like that, I guess. But it's for whatever you can nitpick about this movie, though.
I mean, we've picked at a couple of few things, but overall, like that's very tiny in the scope of the entire movie.
It's pretty much as far as a genre film goes, but even just as a film in general, stepping outside of the genre, it's pretty perfect in almost every way. Where everything is so good. And then the action scenes in this movie, we didn't really talk about the action scenes in the first one because there aren't really a ton of great ones. The best one is obviously the final fight between Spider-Man and Goblin. But in this scene, you get so many amazing action sequences between Doc. You talk about the bank. You talk about like the scene. Obviously, it's a Raimi film, so it's very horror inspired. Where the scene where Doc Ock wakes up in the hospital and the tentacles attack all the doctors is such an amazing scene.
Oh yeah, it's so great.
Literally, this movie is literally note perfect from the time that Doc Ock shows up at the cafe, throws the car through the window, and tells Peter to bring Spider-Man to him, and then that whole action scene that follows. They're fighting on the clock tower and then they're fighting on the train. So good. Actually, you know what, to step back to the first film really quick, that's one of the things that bugged me about the first film that I loved about the second. Like in the first one, they did it because it was a response to 9/11, plain and simple. They had all the New Yorkers being like, yeah, you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us. And, you know, they're throwing garbage at the Goblin. And, like, the Goblin's on his glider, which has missiles and shit on it, and he clearly doesn't care about people. So why would he not just fucking launch a missile at him and blow them all up? Like, just, but it was clearly one of those things they put in there. It was reactionary to 9/11. But in the second film, you know, it makes sense that all the people on the train step between Spider-Man and Ock because he just saved all their lives.
Yeah.
You know, and they get that really touching moment where he passes out and they catch him on the front of the train and then they pass him back through the crowd and they lay him down. And then you got the guy standing over him and they look at him and they're like, he's just a kid, you know, but they all kind of realize the gravity of the situation that this guy literally just put his life on the line to save them and save all of their lives. So it completely makes sense that they step in between he and Doc Ock. And then Ock, of course, with the tentacles, just shoves them all to the side and grabs Spider-Man and takes them. And
yeah, Spidey's like, hey, y'all should let go of me.
And then you even have the great action sequence at the end too, where, you know, Spider-Man shows up at the little waterfront rundown, whatever the hell it is.
Oh yeah. That rundown waterfront. That, even like, that is factory.
Great it, as well. It's not so much a great action scene. It is like a great dramatic scene where, you know,
it is a fantastic dramatic scene.
Yeah. Octavius kind of, you know, retakes control of his life. And even as much as MJ kind of rubs my craw, I think that Kirsten Dunst is good in that scene where, you know, when she finally sees that it's him without the mask on, she's kind of, you know, just taken aback. And speaking of great reactions in this film, another one is where when Harry unmasks him after Octavius delivers him to him, he takes the mask off and then the look of shock on his face, he drops the knife that he was going to stab him with and he's shocked. That Peter, of course, gets up and rips the barbed wire off and he's like, there's bigger things going on right now than you and me. You've got to tell me where he is because he's going to destroy the city. Like, it's so everything, literally everything about this movie is 100% on point. Nitpicks aside, this is as perfect as a comic book movie gets. And I dare say that few will ever come close to the level that it's at. Very, very few of them.
I can agree. There are very few of them that actually, I think, are very well done.
Except for Spider-Man 3, because obviously that exceeds this in every way possible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, totally. I mean, if this was a 5, then that's an 11. Oh, God. I feel bad about that now. But no, like,
you can't take that like, back. You got to cut that soundbite out now. And
oh,
it's time, isn't
it's
it?
It's terrible. It's just about there. It's just about there. I mean, like you say, that end scene and the course, you know, Harry and everybody, and you just kind of get to the end of it. And of course, Spider-Man just continues on. You have him swinging out of there. He tells MJ he can't be with her again, and then we're on to the third film, Spider-Man fucking 3.
Just a little something the boys in the ad department and I whipped up. As you know, circulation at the Bugle's been pretty good, though not as good as the New York Times, or the Daily News, or the Post, or several other small North.
Get on with you, moron! What?
Your blood pressure, Mr. Jameson. Your wife told me to tell you to watch the anger.
You tell my wife!
Thank you.
So, I propose this campaign. Daily Bugle? That's obvious. It's hip, it's now. I came up with that one. It's wow, that's actually Erickson. He goes crazy. We gave him a couple lattes. He's like, shh. And how? No, it's me again.
Time to take your pill. Not that one. Not that one. Drink plenty of water.
Thank you. Continue.
Betty, Betty, Bo, Betty, Banana, Nana, Bo, Betty.
He's busy.
Oh, no, I'm just here to talk to you, beautiful.
What's that smell?
That's a little something called Nice and Easy. What's on you?
It's called Go Away.
Get off! That is the dumbest idea you've ever had. You have had some doozy.
Blood pressure. Hey, where are you going?
Who are you?
You hired him last week. Freelance.
I did? What's that smell?
It's Brock, sir. Edward Brock Jr.
Who?
Wow, can I just say I really like that shirt? Here, it's a crane accident. Check out the light source.
He likes my shirt.
Hey, Betty.
Hey, Pete, you better get in there. New guy. He's trying to sell some Spidey photos.
Oh. Thanks.
Parker! You're late. Maybe too late. Bruckner here beat you to it.
It's Brock, sir. Edward Brock Jr.
I got you this.
But he got me this.
Wait, how'd you get that? I didn't see you there. How'd you get that high?
Climbed. Nearly fell off a flagpole.
A flagpole?
Which one do we use?
I like Bernstein's.
It's better.
Cheaper, too. Congratulations, son. We'll use your shot. I'll pay you $50.
All right, JJ. I'm your man. I know more about what makes a good picture than any photographer in this town. See, photography, it's not just about, no offense, flagpoles, whatever. It's about lighting, composition, drama. I want a staff job, sir. I have a girl that I intend to marry. And I guess, I don't know, I have this stupid little dream of working with one of the greatest newspaper editors of our time, J. Jonah Jameson.
Well, we do have an opening. Johnson quit, remember?
You fired him.
Whatever.
Wait a minute. I know what makes a good picture, and I've been here a long time. If there's a staff job, Mr. Jameson, I think I deserve it.
He's right, Jonah. Peter's been with us for years. He's done a great job.
You want a staff job, and you want a staff job. Anybody care about what I want?
I do.
Shut up. Get out. I want the public to see Spider-Man for the two-bit criminal he really is. He's a fake. He's full of stick-em. Catch him in the act. Spider-Man with his hand in a cookie jar. Whoever brings me that photo gets a job. What are you waiting for? Chinese New Year? Go, go, go.
I'm on it, boss.
You'll never get that shot.
Oh, we'll see.
That's literally the only reaction that you can come up with.
Yeah,
for
the only like
this
legitimate
film.
Reaction.
I just let's try. You know what we should do is we should try to pick out what is better about the film before we get into what's not better about the film.
Oh, okay.
So the short section before the long section.
Well, one of the better scenes of the film is when Jonah is sitting there in his office and literally these people, everybody's standing around talking to him, and he goes to start yelling, and his secretary instantly buzzes in and says, your wife wanted me to tell you to stay calm, and he goes, you know what, you tell my wife.
And then he immediately, yep.
Thank you. Oh, that's so great.
J. Jonah Jameson is still 100% on point. in this movie. He's one of the, and Rosemary Harris, again, we talked about her, you know, two of the aspects that carry forward through the entire franchise that are still good, even as everything else in the third film devolves into literal and utter nonsense.
Oh yes, definitely. Definitely. I mean, the first half is okay. Like Harry, when he finally like kind of comes in and that first little fight between him and Spidey.
That's actually a great scene. Cool.
That's a great, yeah.
It is.
I like that. I think it's really good. I think it's really well set up. That's one of the things that's really hard about this movie is that there's three introductions of three different villains in this movie. And yeah. I'm like, okay.
It's great, especially in that opening, because you've been building for it for two movies. You know, and
yeah.
James Franco even has a line during the third movie. He's like, you knew it would come to this, or you knew this was coming, or something
yeah,
to that
you
effect.
Knew this day was, yeah, it was like, you knew this
and
day
it's
was
kind
coming.
Of, it's kind of, you know, saying that not only to Spider-Man, but to all the fans. Like, yeah, we've been promicing this for two movies, and now here it is, finally.
Yeah, here we go.
These two going
now
at each other.
Giving it to you.
It was really, really great. And I really hate that they gave him amnesia at the end of the fight, and I mentioned it when I was posting on Facebook earlier about watching all the movies, and I said, boy, I bet Harry's amnesia is going to wear off right when the plot requires it to. Because that's all the only reason you ever give a character amnesia in literally anything. But
it's
that didn't work for me.
Right at the right time.
Yeah, exactly. That didn't work for me necessarily, but I still really enjoyed, I think in terms of good aspects of this film, I still think Harry as the new goblin or whatever the hell,
Harry Osborn is supposed to become the Green Goblin.
Yeah.
He's supposed to take over as the Green Goblin. Because somebody actually asked me one time, they were like, is he supposed to be the Hobgoblin? I'm like, no.
No, he's
the
not
Hobgoblin's
supposed to be the Hobgoblin.
Actually a different guy.
Yeah.
It's like, that's actually a completely different guy. Harry becomes the Green Goblin again and, you know, basically has like slight changes, but, you know, of course he made... I
little
think it's
changes,
wild. Yeah. He made little changes, but in this, you know, instead of having the actual goblin glider, he makes a fucking snowboard.
Which, I mean, you know, in terms of things to hate about the movie, I guess that's probably really low on the list. Like, I don't care about that as much as I care about a lot of the other stuff in this movie.
It's very low. It's very low on the list.
I love his arc, though.
To me than anything.
Yeah. I love the arc that he continues on with Peter at the beginning of this movie. So the beginning of the movie is set up extremely well. And then you get the introduction to Flint Marko, you know, who they go for the kind of tragic villain arc that they went with for Doc Ock in the second film, where you know you have him come in and he's trying to do these things for noble reasons, but unfortunately, you know, fell into a life of crime. You know,
that's one of the things I actually didn't enjoy. Although I really like the actor,
I love Thomas Hayden Church.
I love Tom Hayden Church.
Yeah.
I love him. I just didn't feel like he was right in this movie. I didn't really think he fit the character, and I really didn't much care for his actual story arc because I didn't much care for the idea that he just came in here, his kid has cancer, this is the whole thing, and now we've tied it all the way back to the first movie.
Which
just
was
so that way at the
utter and complete garbage.
Yeah, the whole movie literally could have done without this.
That's like, kind of one of the things
I would have liked
where,
Sandman if he hadn't had this goddamn story arc.
Where he got sidelined. He got sidelined with the baggage of, let's retcon the ending, of not even the ending, like the kind of beginning of the first movie where this is what really ended up happening to Uncle Ben. And it was really Sandman all along who did it. And then, of course, the film leads you to believe that he did it maliciously at the beginning of it. And then at the end, you find out it was really...
He tells his side of the story.
Oh, my God. But the problem that I have with it is, and we'll get into the black suit and Venom and all that nonsense too, but I think that his story arc works well enough if... You give Spidey the black suit, and the black suit makes him more aggressive. And, you know, that's what makes him chase down and seemingly kill Sandman earlier on, where, you know, that's all it needs to be. It can just be based on the aggression that he's feeling because of the suit. The aggression doesn't have to come from this whole stupid Uncle Ben retcon that they're using because the way that they wrote the whole black suit thing was that it kind of reflects Peter's emotional state more outward and makes him, you know, especially more aggressive. But why can't it just just make him more aggressive anyway? Why does it have to be tied to his emotional state? Because then you contrive all this bullshit nonsense to fill into the plot about Uncle Ben and all this other nonsense. It doesn't need to be there. It's all stupid.
It's stupid. I agree with you totally. It's entirely stupid. Now, the thing is, with the black suit, like you said, they do in kind of set up that it is part of his it attaches to his emotional state. And in a sense, this is true. The symbiote suit, when he actually gets it with Spider-Man, the suit attaches to the host and actually becomes part of the host. It then accepts parts of it, like it retains memories. It literally becomes that person in a sense. But yeah, the entire thing of the symbiote is it does enhance aggression. It enhances aggression because essentially Venom itself, the symbiote Venom, is anger.
Yeah. Do you know what the most frustrating thing about the black suit in this movie is? And it's not even that I dislike the fact that they brought in the symbiote and they brought in the black suit and whatever. Mm-hmm. I hated that they basically just made it an outfit that he can take off at will in the movie, because after he gets the symbiote, he has the whole battle with Sandman again, yeah, and then he just takes it off and he's normal Peter Parker again, but then he decides to put it on again and then he becomes, you know, more darker evil Spidey. But then later on when he's trying
to
take
hair
it off,
change, you like his hair change,
oh my,
for when every time he was black Spidey, he had to make sure to change his hair, his eyes became more bloodshot.
It's so frustrating because they make it so, oh, he's taking this suit on and off at will and using it whenever he feels like it, but then later on in the movie, like, because the plot requires it to, now the suit won't come off of him. It's just like,
yeah, now it has attached itself completely like it's supposed to have from the
beginning. That's how it should have been from the beginning. It should have just been like, once he gets it attached to him, he just becomes more and more aggressive, more and more angry and all this stuff, and alienates people and drives them away, maims Harry. Like, I think the maiming Harry thing is fine when they have the fight in the mansion. That's another great fight, yep, sequence between the two, when they have that fight in the mansion when he's under the influence of the black suit. And then, you know, that's one of the areas where I really, really liked what they did with it. But then, like I said, it's
the
just
MJ dance club scene. Come on now. I love the look on your face when I had to see that, because, like, seriously, what about this? It's so fucking bad.
That's where this movie, and I was talking to Dan from Netflix and Swill earlier. He's a huge, huge Spider-Man fan, and he just rewatched all of these movies as well. And, you know, that was what he and I were talking about earlier, that's the turning point in this film. Uncle Ben retcon aside, because that is still stupid. I still hate that. But for the most part, most of the rest of the story for this film is fine up to this point. It's not perfect, it's not great, a few tweaks here and there would have been better, but yeah, the film is mostly fine up to this point where he takes that stroll down the street as emo Spidey. This is like right after he maims Harry, and
oh yeah,
he takes that stroll down the street as emo's, and then the whole dance club scene,
he's getting everybody the fucking finger guns. He's like, hey. Oh dude. But one last thing about the black suit, though. I really would have liked it instead of having been just a black version of his spider suit, and it have attached to the spider suit for some reason he went to sleep in.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I wish it had just been like the actual thing where he was laying in his bed just normally and it attached himself, and it was the sleek, smooth suit with the big ass white spider on it.
Yeah. That would have been cool. And even when they finally turn, you know, Eddie
and
Brock into Venom later.
It actually did the thing, because it did it with Brock. That's what pissed me off the most in the movie is it does it exactly with Brock. Is it actually attaches itself, and it, when it cuts back, it like pulls itself back and like basically inserts itself into your body.
Yeah.
And
that's
then when
the
you
annoying
want the suit,
thing
it pulls
it
out.
It's like it's almost like, for whatever reason, like it doesn't fully attach itself to Spider-Man for whatever reason. Like, it just attaches itself to his suit and he can still take it on and off and whatever. But then when it attaches to Brock later in the film, it literally, you know, transforms him. It literally becomes part of him. You know, it goes like there's that whole like kind of really nasty scene where like the symbiote's attached to him. It goes down his throat and everything, like into his mouth. Like, that's great. And like, why didn't it do that to Spider-Man? Because the plot didn't require it to. Because of the way they decided to make Eddie look after the symbiote attached, because they gave him all those nasty jagged teeth and shit. They didn't want to have to, you know, rough Peter up that much. You know, when he had the suit on, so they were like, well, let's just have him sweep his hair out in front of his face.
For some, well, I mean, even with like the original suit, like it's supposed to just have like the slick face and look just like, I mean, the Spider-Man suit, and Venom's the only one. I think it's ridiculous that literally, like, while he's in the middle of this transformation and the Venom suit is attaching itself, his regular teeth become spiked.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just in the suit, which they're just supposed to be as he's got the Venom suit out and look, Venom.
I'm evil Nick now. I've got the.
Yeah.
It's like straight up soap
opera. I see it.
Opera.
You got it's just like, hey man, let me shift my hair right to the left, and I've now become evil Nick.
It's like a soap opera like villain transformation. It of course everybody knows, you know, by now that this was, they had a script without Venom in it, and then the studio, Avi Arad especially, really wanted Venom in this movie, and they shoved him in it. Even though he doesn't fit in it.
He doesn't technically fit in the movie. I wanted to see him, but I thought he was going to be a bigger part of the movie. He really isn't. He's really just shoved into the movie,
yeah.
And it's not well done. And it's literally only like the last like 30 minutes of the movie.
It's one of those things where like early on, and I remember this still, from back in the early days of like the original Spider-Man movie coming out, like they talked to Sam Raimi when the original film was coming out about Venom, and Sam Raimi hated the character. He hated him. So when the studio forced this character on him, Raimi just, he was just like, I think he just threw his hands up in the air and he was like, well, fuck it. We'll just, whatever. I don't care anymore. Like he lost control of the film, and he lost control of the script to the point where, yeah. I really think Sam Raimi just said, well, fuck it. I'm going to make it shit. And I'm going to make sure he dies at the end of the movie to make it, you know, even more,
yeah,
dialed in. You know, I really feel like that's what happened, you know, at some level, subconsciously or whatever, from Sam Raimi, where he basically, like, his treatment of Venom in the film, the way that Venom was basically just a side character and was basically garbage, where I really feel like that's Sam Raimi's middle finger at the studio being like, all right, I have to use him, but this is how I'm going to use him.
Well, I mean, come on now. You have like this shitty setup with him all the way through the movie until you get to the scene where he becomes Venom, which is ripped out of like the animated series.
Yep, yep.
And I'm like, and then you get him for like 30 minutes and I'm like, and they kill him, and I'm like, this is terrible. Everything about him has been terrible from the moment they introduced the character of Eddie Brock, and it was fucking Topher Grace.
I don't even think, like, I think with better direction in terms of the character, and I love Sam Raimi, don't get me wrong, but I just don't feel like Raimi ever cared about this character enough to do it right or to even try to do it well.
I agree with you.
So he basically just like let Topher Grace really ham it up and just really cheese all over the whole thing. Like, hi, it's Brock, sir.
I'm pretty
Edward
sure
Brock Jr.
I'm almost certain that, like, literally the that terrible ass line of my spidey sense is tingling. If you know what I mean. I almost think that shit was literally just ad libbed. I think he literally just said that. And I would say I'm keeping it.
Yeah,
I'm keeping it.
I would say maybe it was, but you know, with how bad the rest of the script is, it's really hard to tell.
It's hard. It's hard to tell.
And that final battle scene where after you go from Spider-Man 2 with the unbelievably great train battle and all that stuff, it's so well done. The final battle in this is just garbage. Like they've got news reporters talking over the whole, they keep cutting back to these news reporters for what?
At one point,
I have to know whose artistic decision that was. Was that something the screenwriter did? Was that something that Raimi was like, hey, what if we had these news, or what, whoever's decision it was, wherever that came in the creative process?
Because we needed a climactic setup of where he's getting like crushed by Sandman, and we cut to the fucking news anchor literally just staring up at the situation. This is terrible. It's a terrible day for New York City. This might be the end. I don't know how he's taking it anymore. I can't see how he can take another blow.
It's just so, so, so bad. Literally everything about it. And then, like, the action itself really isn't even all that good. And then we have to throw it in here because this is actually something that I noticed on this watch through. The butler, the goddamn butler comes in.
Thank you. Thank you, because as a matter of fact, we were on the same wavelength, because I was just thinking that.
Here's the thing that he says in the movie, okay? And I always thought, I had been forever since I had seen it, so I had always thought that he came in and said, no, Spider-Man didn't kill your father, blah, blah, blah. No, what he says to Peter, or not Peter, what he says to Harry in the film is that he cleaned Norman Osborn's wound, and it was clear that it was self-inflicted from his glider. That's yep. what he tells Harry, and that's what convinces Harry to go help Spider-Man. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, wait a minute. First of all, he was dead. Why are you cleaning his wound? That's number one. Number two, is there something special, per se, about a self-inflicted glider stab wound that's different from an intentional glider stab wound? Like, what is it? Like, this butler just knows that the stab wound was self-inflicted from the glider. Like, how on earth could you possibly know that? And why is that? It, I know it's because the plot requires Harry to go sacrifice himself at the end battle and help Spider-Man. That's literally, it's just something that was forced in there. Well, how else are we supposed to get Harry to go fight with him? We'll just contrive this dumb bullshit about the butler. But, like, that's the line in the script. That's the line in the script. Oh, it was obvious to me that the wound was self-inflicted from his glider. How is it obvious? What about it? What?
All right.
What?
even if he had just changed the way he had said it and said, you know, I while I was checking his body and it's I looked garbage, at the wound regardless. While it was moving, I saw that he had been stabbed, yeah. obviously in the lower by like three prongs by that looked pretty similar to what was on his glider. You know, he could even go, I assume that they may have come, but to go that they were obvious is ridiculous. The fact that he was cleaning a dead body man's wounds was ridiculous.
That's the best part about it. It's like, I was cleaning his wounds, and it was obvious to me that the wounds were self-inflicted from his glider. Okay. And I'm like, that makes literally no sense. It's like, if you stab yourself with a knife, or if I stab you with a knife, what's the difference in the stab wound? How is it different?
It's just I've been stabbed.
It's still a fucking stab wound. Like, it's not even a stab wound that you witnessed. It was after he was already dead, and you're cleaning his... Like, what?
And why did it take you... An entire, like, why did it take you two fucking movies to mention this?
You couldn't mention this to Peter or to Harry, maybe at the funeral or whatever at the end of the first
movie. Or like, oh yeah, by the way. You could mention it to him after that, yeah. Like, literally, like, after he's done consoling and been like, hey.
Yeah, BT Dubs.
Your dad, BT Dubs, you know, yeah. Your dad was killed by himself. Like, yeah. Literally, you know, he killed himself.
It's so, so terrible. Oh my God, is it stupid. Everything else aside, like, you could name your thing about this movie that's bad, but that scene is like so insulting to the viewer's intelligence. It's just shocking.
Oh, it's bad. Shocking. It is. It's like, you're all dumbasses.
That's why there's people that like this movie, and I cannot for the life of me understand
who
why.
Likes this movie.
There are people. They're out there. I know they're out there.
That's insane.
I like things about this movie, and I think it was well intentioned at the beginning, but then it just devolved into nonsense. It just became a complete and total shit show, and it's terrible. Like, I liked,
dude.
I it's been forever
Sandman
since I saw him
go.
Yeah. Remember they were supposed to do that fourth
Sandman
one where they were going to get the fourth movie going with Vulture and Black Cat or whatever, and then it fell through, and that's when they decided to do the reboot or whatever. But
yeah,
like,
they decided to do the reboot and come in. Now, something I didn't mention through any of these is I think is kind of ridiculous is at the very beginning through the first movie, you get the mention of Dr. Connors, which is a throw to the idea of Lizard. Who's one of the first villains he fights in the animated series is Doc Connors, who turns into Lizard. And then later on in the second film, though, he's his fucking professor.
Yep.
Still. He's still his professor, and he's riding his ass. And he's still alive in the third movie.
Yep. That was a huge long game that they could have set up, and that would have been great.
Yeah, I mean, anything, you could have long gamed it into the fourth movie and not done what you were saying, but maybe used actual Lizard at that point.
I still feel like with some tweaks.
A reptile, you know.
But, yeah, with some tweaks. I mean, obviously, the Uncle Ben retcon's got to go. I think that Sandman works well enough as a villain on his own if you don't give him the Uncle Ben retcon thing. And then if you make it more, if honestly, you make Flint Marko this villain who has this kind of tragic story, and then you make Spider-Man pretty much the aggressor the whole time they're fighting, and you make Spider-Man almost kind of the antagonist of his own movie, and then... You know, it ends with a final battle, and he rips the goddamn suit off, and then the Venom suit you know, that final shot in the bell tower when he leaps at the camera, that's the ending shot of the movie. You have a fourth movie that's just all about him fighting against Venom. And then at the end of the fourth movie, he catches him and imprisons him and he meets Cletus Cassidy. And then the fifth movie is Spider-Man's well, yeah, forced to team even up have with
that.
Venom.
Like at the end of yeah. that, where he literally Venom spits off.
Yeah, where he's forced off, to team up with Carnage, Venom then so. to face against Carnage. I think it was perfectly laid out. It was perfectly telegraphed to completely set all that up. But instead, they shove Venom into this thing. They did this whole. God damn it! This movie's bad. Holy God.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so hard to sit through. I was doing spring cleaning. I was talking to you about this before we recorded, but I was doing spring cleaning and I wasn't even like actively, like intently watching it, but even like passively watching it as I'm doing other things was hard. Just hearing it as I like move a bookshelf into a different part of the living room was hard. It was just terrible. I'm like, I'd literally rather be looking at or listening to anything else. It's especially yeah. after how great Spider-Man 2 is. Like, that's why this third movie is so derided, because not only is it not a good movie, but it follows on the heels of literally one of the best that the genre's ever put out. It's such a great movie that this movie, every single place that it can trip up and become a shitty follow-up, it does, and then it does it hard. Oh, my God.
Oh, it tropes itself up hard through the whole thing. It's so tropey.
I hate it.
He literally, like you said, Sam Raimi is just by the third one is just like, fuck you all. You're all, it's literally like he's telegraphing it out for 5-year-olds. It's like, you're all like stupid as hell and somebody pissed me off. So I am making a giant piece of trash. It's like they pissed him off halfway through the film.
Yeah, like I said,
he got through the first half of the movie
like,
and then he just got pissed off.
I seriously feel like the whole treatment of the Venom character and the whole final battle itself, like, I feel like all of that is just a big middle finger to the studio for forcing the character into the script to begin with, because Raimi never liked him and never wanted to do the character. And then they shove him in there anyway. And I really just feel like this was him just flying the bird, being like, yep, if you're going to force me to use Venom, I'm going to shit literally all over him.
Which admittedly sucks really hard, because I know, right, you say Raimi, he doesn't like him, and I'm like, but I love Venom. He's one of my favorite
a lot of people
villains.
Do. I think he's great from like the animated series and whatnot. So it's tough to see him in this film where it's just blah.
It's just shit. I mean, it's literally, it is fucking Eric from That 70s Show, and he is literally still trying to get Red's approval.
Oh, hi, sir. It's Brock, Edward Brock Jr. Oh, yeah. Hi.
Yeah. Edward Brock Jr. And, if you do this, it's going to kill every single part of my life. Oh, somehow I'm going to lose my girlfriend if you tell everybody I photoshopped this. I don't get it. It's literally like that. I mean, come on now. Like, in the middle of this, he's like, it's photoshopped, and then he gets fired and apparently loses everything. His girlfriend dumps him, and now he's wanting to kill Peter Parker. And I'm like, okay, this was terrible setup. This was god awful, and this is the worst fucking possible way for you to try to set up Gwen Stacy in any possible way of trying to come in. Is I don't even know if he wanted to do anything with her as Black Cat.
I don't even know.
It was so god awful. I'm just like, so you basically just made Gwen Stacy this crap side character that only pops in here and there just long enough to fuck up him and MJ's relationship.
Oh, I
and
just...
then she's gone. Like, and then, like, literally, like we said, dancing, then she's gone. And
yeah, you never see her again for the rest of the film. She does that, and then they also do that with Sandman, where he disappears from the film. This is also a problem.
He washes him out.
Yeah, he washes him out, he turns him into mud or whatever, and then he disappears from the film wholesale for a good chunk of time.
Oh, he doesn't show back up until right after Venom has come back up and he hammer trills him in the face.
Yeah, which is...
All of a sudden, we're setting up a plan to beat up Spider-Man.
And that's the thing, like, it immediately jumps to this whole thing of Venom's like, yeah, I've been looking for you. It's like, since when? What? Like, why would...
Well, not only that, if he has all of
not
Peter's
only has he
memories,
been
looking for him,
yeah.
But how the fuck does he also know how what his story was? Because Peter didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's the...
Peter didn't know his backstory.
That's the best part.
Venom did.
Why, if he has Peter's memories and things like that, why would he not be like, well, I'm going to go to Harry and get Harry to help fight against him? You know,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
I think that might have even been more interesting to see than, and then you get this giant, just, Sandman just looks like a giant pile of shit with cinder blocks and tires sticking out of him. Just like, roar, roar, like, at the, in that end battle, he's just, it's so bad.
Yeah.
It's just terrible.
am I interrupting something?
Oh my God. I hate it so much. Just make it stop. Make it. I'm reliving it again. No. We're talking about Spider-Man movies on my show this week too, where we got to talk about best Spider-Man moments. Guess how many of them are going to be from Spider-Man 3?
Absolutely none. Maybe one, and that should be J. Jonah Jameson. Yeah. And generally, whatever he has to say.
Like, if you were going to nominate anything from this movie, it would maybe, like I said, maybe that mansion fight scene.
Oh, if there was anything I was to nominate as best moments from Spider-Man 3 is literally, hey, call Betty. Or call Betsy. The caterer? Yeah. Tell her not to open that caviar.
Yeah. Oh, wait, no, that's Spider-Man 2. That's the wedding. Because she runs.
Oh,
out of
yeah,
the
that's the wedding. That's
never
the wedding. Sorry, damn it.
See, that's what you get for trying to find good stuff about Spider-Man 3.
I was trying
3.
To find. Literally, the only thing I guess is in Spider-Man 3 literally is the. Your wife said not to get so angry. Tell her I said thank you.
Yeah. It's the. I actually, in term, one thing I hate that they did with JJJ. In that final battle scene in Spider-Man 3, when the little girl has the camera, and then she's like,
oh.
I forget how much money she makes him give it. And then she's like,
she gives $100 for just the camera.
Yeah, the film's extra. Like, God, even that scene was terrible. Even that was just
that
horrible.
That got on my nerves. That literally got on my nerves. Because and the thing that kills me is, as you're watching the scene, you're visibly watching this, and at no point does her hand open the back of the camera and take the film out. So that means she was standing there with a camera with no film the entire time.
The film's extra. Oh my, just no. Oh, I hate this movie.
It's terrible.
I hate it so much. It's just terrible.
All right, so we're going to get out of this. We're going to get out of this. And we're actually going to hop in and tell you everybody exactly how we're going to rate all three of these. So let's find out if...
We got to lose it. Lose it. Lose it. Lose it. We got to lose it. Lose it. Lose it. Lose it. We got
to
lose it.
All right, everybody. So we're going to hop into this and kind of rate them a little bit. Now, as you know, the general scale is actually made up of enjoyment. It is out of 5, and we rate them as a case of 40s, a case, a six-pack, a 40, and going to sleep, which is basically you fucking hate this movie. And it's terrible. It would be like a 1, you know what I'm saying? So it's always something I've enjoyed. Like I say, it's all about enjoyment here and how much you liked it. So, Nick, I'm going to let you start off. Let's tell me what your ratings would be for Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, and Spider-Man 3.
Well, the first one I think is probably the hardest one to peg. I would say I wouldn't go a full case on the first one. I would maybe say a 6-pack because it's still got some things about it that are a little bit detracting, but overall it's pretty enjoyable. So
okay.
You've got that. I mean, the second one's not even a case. It's a keg. It's a whole truckload of kegs. It's just amazing. It's so good in literally every aspect. And then the third one's not even going to sleep. The third one's a coma that you don't ever wake up from. Like, and you're having nothing but nightmares in the coma about just butlers and shit.
So new rating. If it's not even worth going to sleep, you are now comatose.
Yeah, you are comatose.
Or you're a vegetable. You have now become a vegetable.
Just pull the plug. Just cut the life support. It's done. Yep. Get it over with.
Just get me out of here.
Get me the hell out of here, please.
Please do
Good
not leave
God.
Me living. But I'm, you know, I'm almost going to agree with you. I think I'm going to have to go with the case for like a 4 on the Spider-Man, the first one, because overall, I say, other than the few detractable things, like you said, and the things that I don't much care for, overall, I really enjoy the film. I really enjoyed it when I watched it the first time. And even on this rewatch, I still really liked it. So I'm going to have to go with a case on that. And then, of course, with Spider-Man 2, I've got to give it a case of 40s. Or I can just steal Nick's and just do it like a case of fucking kegs.
Oh, yeah.
So it means it gets like an 11.
You just walked into the beer, like, warehouse, and you get to try everything that's on tap, and you get to take a keg home. And
yep, you've walked into Mr. Mongorium's Keg Emporium.
There you go.
I like it. And of course, I'm going with Nick on the, like, dude, going to sleep, comatose, fucking dead vegetable, just pulled my life support on 3, because it's terrible.
There's
no redeeming qualities, really.
And anything that you can say is a redeeming quality is immediately overwhelmed by a tidal wave of shit. Just washed away in a deluge of it.
Oh,
just
totally.
Like the Sandman.
Oh, God. The Sandman totally just swept away in a delusional wind of guilt and self-doubt.
It was obvious to me that the wound was self-inflicted from his own glider. What? God damn it.
You killed my Uncle Ben, but you were trying to save your daughter. Fly away. Fly away.
Why does Sandman fly? I don't understand why Sandman can fly.
I understand he's made of sand, so I guess he can fly away in the wind if it's a heavy enough wind, as though he was being picked up as...
Yeah, I mean, that's
He's
fine,
literally
but
dust
like...
in the wind. All right, so apparently they should have just been playing Kansas as dust in the wind as he flew away.
Oh, my life.
All we are is dust in the wind.
Oh, my God. Like, I mean, literally, like, there was just some massive updrafts. Like, he's just this perfectly, like, snake-shaped trail of dirt flying.
Oh, dude, it's perfect. It's like, it's fucking just, it's the most
You're my boy, Blue.
Shape.
I can't sing that song without thinking of old school now. You're my boy, Blue.
Oh, dude, that is literally... I still confuse people with that, because I will randomly just be like, you're my boy, Blue, you're my boy. And they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm like, it's because you're lame.
Yeah. God.
Oh, this
damn,
forever
this
will be one of my favorite lines.
God,
like,
this
ever.
Movie is terrible.
Oh, the movie's fucking
It's so
god-awful.
Filled with bad decisions that clearly just from every level were just either mailed in, or somebody somewhere thought it was going to be a good idea, and they're literally the only person.
This is literally the prime example of apparently what it looked like was about 12 people sat down and said, this seems like a good idea.
What if we had news reporters talking about the battle as it's happening? What?
Yeah. So let me just throw this idea out there. So we're going to have a suit, right? But we're going to have the symbiote, but it's only going to attach to a suit. And then later on, it's going to completely be attached to him. This makes good sense, right? We're throwing this idea. Everybody, let's. It sounds like some good brainstorming. Let's send out for gelato.
Oh my God, this movie. Nope, I'm done. I can't talk about it anymore. I'm going to become comatose if I think about it much longer.
Oh, dude, it doesn't help that you have to think about this very shortly from now again.
Fortunately, we're talking about our best Spider-Man moments, so this film will get nearly a mention in that category.
Dude, I can't wait. I can't wait to hear this.
My favorite part is when they go to the police station, and it's like, no, it wasn't this guy all along. It was this guy.
I want somebody.
It's so contrived. It's so manufactured.
To mention Spider-Man 3 and actually try to say, oh, man, this was great. It's like...
I'm going to be queuing up the Knicks rants theme if that happens, let me tell you. Jesus.
Oh, that's fucking great. But speaking of your show and Knicks rants, why don't you tell the people where they can find Epic Film Guys?
We're at Epic Film Guys, literally everywhere on the web, social media, podcatcher of your choice. Just Epic Film Guys. You'll find us.
Right. Like I say, these guys have a fantastic show. It's
can also really find us on the Podfix Network, which now in Technicolor is also a part of. So hell
we
to
are,
the yeah.
We are. Fuck yeah. Network Bros. And of course, we have some new shows that are attached to the network as well as after our name change. So definitely very fun and interesting to see how things going to roll out now that we have a few new faces and we've renamed the network. So that's going to be fun.
Hell yeah.
But, yeah, no, like I say, everybody, y'all make sure you check out Epic Film Guys. They are fucking great. And, of course, they do live streams usually on Monday nights. Those are definitely always really fun, and you should definitely check those out. And, of course, you can find Now in Technicolor at Now in Technicolor or nowintechpod.weebly.com and just type in Now in Technicolor in, like, Google, and, hell, you'll find it, like, everywhere. Believe me, it's pretty much anywhere you want to listen to it at this point.
It's the same thing with us. We're like the first three pages of Google results. So yeah, just search for Epic Film Guys. I promise you'll find us.
Oh yeah, definitely. And of course, make sure you check out the Podfix Network.
Do it.
With all those great shows. Nick, it has been a fucking delight and
hell yeah,
such
man.
A great time to have you on, man. I
was it
was
the opposite of
this.
Spider-Man 3 being on the show. Thank you. Thank you very, very much for having me. It was great.
Oh, I loved it, man. But everybody, this has been great. It's definitely been fun. Everyone take care and stay colorful.
Boom.
Check out more shows like it at PodfixNetwork.com.